No dairy, no sweets, only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bruh. Curry falafel.
What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 57 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes on the Commentist Network at thecommentist.com. And of course, you can always reach us by emailing thebeardedvegans@gmail.com.
In today's episode, we will be talking about what we've been eating, move into some follow-up from our previous discussion about PETA's tactics, discuss a sneaky new tactic some vegan advocates use this Halloween, and then conclude by asking, should vegans press the human extinction button? Stay tuned to find out exactly what that means.
I feel bad for anyone that's listening for the first time. They're like, is this really how they introduce their show every time?
Stay tuned to find out. But so we got a lot of food to discuss because Andy and I have both been in exciting places this past week.
Paul, I feel like our Instagram account has never been so active.
It has not. And I posted, as promised in the last episode, I posted our first story onto our Instagram.
Oh, I have not even seen that.
Well, it's gone now.
Okay. All right.
You'll never know what it was.
Yeah, I'll be like, look at my phone. I'll be like, wow, why are we getting so many notifications right now? Oh my God, Paul actually posted something. It's very exciting.
Yes.
All right. Well, I will start off by talking about my adventures in Gainesville, Florida. I did not have a veg fest this weekend, but I did have Fest.
Fest.
For those not in the know, that is a music festival that kind of takes over downtown Gainesville every Halloween weekend. And it's a total change of pace for me. I get to see a lot of friends, a lot of bands, a lot of friends' bands. And also, Gainesville is quite a vegan-friendly town. So I did get to go to some of my favorites that I love, Reggae Shack and Karma Cream. I won't talk about them, really, because I've done so in previous episodes. But got to suss out some of the other vegan options that were there. And so this is an event where it's a lot of small venues, like every music venue in town basically participates, and it's essentially a bunch of small shows all running at the same time at 14 venues. But there is one large outdoor stage that can hold thousands of people, and in there are a couple of food options, not a lot, and one of them was the vegan hot dog cart, which speaks to my hot dog heart.
Tell me more, Andy. Tell me more.
So it is, I forget the brand that this guy is using. It's not my favorite brand. It's the kind that, like, comes in a can, like, in a liquid. I know.
Gross.
The method of cooking is, like, boiling, not grilling.
Gross.
Grilling would be preferred. I mean, that's, like, the classic, like, baseball stadium method. I mean, it's wrong, but
it is wrong.
I mean, who knows? But if you don't sell a hot dog for a while and it's just sitting on this grill for a while and it gets all dried out, and I don't know, maybe there's a reason for that. But it was just exciting to see that this was one of, I believe, three food offerings in the biggest venue at Fest. And I did get one. It was good. Got the America dog, which had just the classic ketchup, mustard, relish, and sauerkraut, and it was very good. So I was very happy to support the vegan hot dog cart coming all the way up from Orlando. And right next to the vegan hot dog cart was Humble Woodfire, and they do pizza, and they have their whole menu. You know, they have like five or six specialty pizzas, and then you can make your own to all the toppings, including pineapple.
Gross.
And then they just say at the top, anything can be made vegan. So I got a pie from them, the Bianca, which had tofu ricotta, some Daya mozzarella, urban-fused olive oil, garlic, and I had them add basil, and it was very good.
And no pineapple on yours, so that's good.
Well, I didn't think that would go with what I had, Paul.
Or with any other pizza.
Well, then I was like, just give me a handful of pineapple.
Give me a handful of warm pineapples.
Yes. So anyway, I also got to check out a new place. It's been open for about 2 years, so I guess it's not that new, but a place called Crane Ramen. And it's also kind of in the middle of where all these venues are. And they had one vegan ramen on the menu, and it had like a pumpkin broth. It was like a thick pumpkin broth, maybe a little thicker than I would like it to be. but it was very tasty, especially when you added this hot sesame chili garlic oil to the whole thing.
Ooh.
And it also had like some fresh squash and of course a bunch of noodles and a sheet of nori. Bizarrely, some like spring green mix was like thrown on top of it. But it was really good. And the thing that made the whole thing amazing was the service. I've never had such attentive service, Paul. And you would think that during Fest, where there's kind of a bunch of punks who probably aren't tipping that great, that the service would be lacking. But it was amazing. Like, drinks would just appear on the table, and like you'd take your chopsticks out of the wrapper, and then the wrapper would just disappear.
Oh my god!
And your glass would be filled, and then there was three of us eating, and we each got a ramen, but then we only split two appetizers, and at the end the server was like, "Would you like three separate checks?" We're like, "Sure," and then we kind of were like looking at each other, and he was like, "Would you like me to split the appetizers three ways as well?" And just everything was super accommodating.
That's awesome.
The appetizer we got was a baked sweet potato split down the middle and filled with Szechuan tofu.
Oh.
It was my favorite part of the meal.
Nice. Some might say the star.
I don't know if it's really the star, though. It was just really good. So that was Crane Ramen. Star. They were all very enthusiastic about the food, all the servers, and there was quite a wait, and we just chatted with the host for a while, and he was super nice and was really helpful with figuring out what the vegan options were. So I would definitely go back there at least once every Fest. And then the last place I will mention is a place called Off the Drag. And there's a little like coffee wine bar thingy that is called Kyria on the Drag. And they just opened up this like back building called Off the Drag that's only from 11 to 3 where they serve food. And it's 100% vegan.
Nice.
And the menu was really interesting. They had a lot of flavor combos. They had like a barbecue jackfruit quesadilla, and they had some roti. I got was probably a kind of a boring option, but I'm a sucker for it. I got the Villi, which is their vegan Philly cheesesteak.
Of course.
It was really good. Their cheese sauce was great. It was like that cheese whizzy kind of sauce, which is what you want on a cheesesteak. Thinly sliced seitan, a ton of grilled peppers and onions. The bread was really good. So I am really excited to try more from that place. Now, Paul, I know that you're not a Philly cheesesteak kind of fan.
I'm not typically.
Well, did anything change your mind recently?
It did. So I myself had many a food adventure in Philadelphia this past weekend. I'll actually be back for the next 2 weekends. So I will hopefully be getting more and new exciting food options. But I had a whole bunch of stuff in Philly this past weekend. And I did go to Black Root Pizza again, obviously. And in addition to my pizza slice and root beer wings that I need to get every single time, I also sampled the Philly cheesesteak that I had not. I wouldn't say I trash talked it a couple episodes ago.
You previously derided my Philly cheesesteak, Paul.
And damn, it was good. It was very, very good. I would totally just get that. It was great. I loved it. I'm embarrassed about my previous comments. I'd like to revoke them. I will be going back and editing over those episodes.
Well, that's what we do as vegans. We learn new evidence and we change our ways. So this is just an extension of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And I look forward to your retraction of your hatred about pineapple on pizza someday.
Well, I have also another pineapple pizza. I have a pineapple related food item, because I also went to New Harmony, which is a very like China Pan-esque Chinese restaurant.
And but without the bullshit, though.
Without the bullshit. Well, yeah, it's only vegan, which is great. And the menu is enormous, which is also great. It's a little overwhelming. But I believe it was called like Crispy Phoenix Chicken. And it was basically like this crispy chickeny exterior, but they were kind of cut into pockets, and there was this like vegan ham stuffed inside of it. It would have been like real gross. I feel like I felt real gross eating it. It's definitely the type of place that you feel real gross after eating there, but it was delicious. It was so good. And it was in this like kind of plate filled with broccoli, and whatever the sauce that they were using on that broccoli, it was very, very good.
Was it called sauce?
That's what it was called. Yes. Yeah. But the people that I was with, one of them also got a dish that had It was like a similar chicken dish, but it also had pineapples on it. And that was like crossing into that territory of warm pineapples on a savory dish. That was, it was questionable. I still picked off and ate some of them just because I don't like seeing food wasted, but I wasn't happy about it, Andy. I'll tell you that. I was not happy.
Begrudgingly ate some warm, savory pineapple.
Yeah, but this was like, this Phoenix chicken dish was kind of like the dinner entree. It was like a dinner special, I mean. And it came with a couple, like an appetizer, a soup, and then this ice cream. And I got the strawberry ice cream. It was great. But the one of the appetizers, I think it was called like vegetable pancake or something like that. I'm pretty sure there was not a single vegetable inside this vegetable pancake. I'm pretty sure it was just like extra fried dough, and it was delicious. It was basically just eating fried dough and dipping sauce, and it was phenomenal.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. But so I was staying with my girlfriend in Philadelphia, and she lives about a 2-minute walk away from Dottie's Donuts, which I have never had before. Pretty much my vegan donut experience is limited to Dunwell Donuts up until this point. I guess I've also had vegan treats too, but Dottie's Donuts, I think I had my first apple fritter that I've ever had in my life.
Yes.
And I was like, you know what? I've never had an apple fritter. I kind of want to get a donut because I haven't had a donut in a while. But, you know, I've never had an apple fritter. I'll try it. My God, it was delicious.
Welcome to the real world, Paul.
Yeah. But, yeah, the apple fritter was great. I also had, like, bites of a Boston cream donut. That one was okay. Not the star of the show. The apple fritter was the star of the show. But, Boston cream was okay. I think there was like a pumpkin glazed donut because this was around Halloween. That was also good. It was just great. I went there the next morning as well and just got an everything bagel with this. They have a few different flavors of cream cheese, and this one was like a spicy garlic. It was like a chili garlic cream cheese.
That sounds really good.
Yes, it was very good. And in the park that's right next to Dottie's Donuts on Saturday morning, there also is a farmer's market that Kung Fu Hoagies happen to be at. Andy.
Yes, Paul.
I freaking love Philadelphia. It is. I'm walking down the street and there's a vegan food cart. Like, what the heck?
That's how I felt like the first time I went to Austin, when I was just walking down the street and found the vegan nom. And I was like, oh my God, amazing vegan taco cart just here in the middle of what seemed like not a lot going on.
Yeah.
I had Kung Fu Hoagies at the Phoenixville Veg Fest recently, and I didn't get what I wanted, and I forget exactly what I wanted, but what I did, because they were out, because it was a really successful Veg Fest, so that was awesome. But what I did get was really good. And people may remember me talking about the pad thai, which I ate later, that had congealed into one solid brick.
Yeah.
So I liked it, and I'd like to try them when they have everything I want and things are fresh. What did you think of Kung Fu Hoagies?
It was good. I've had it before, I think, at This Is Hardcore 1 year, but I got a meatball sub, which I don't think I've gotten before. That was great. I have not had a meatball sub in a while. It was massive. It was also extraordinarily large. That was great. And then I got like a kind of chicken on a stick, which is kind of just like a novelty food.
But it was awesome. Call that a stickin'?
A stickin'. and it was good. It was really good. I will definitely be, next time I happen to walk by Kung Fu Hoagies, I will definitely be getting some of that again. And then the last thing that I wanted to mention was there was a kind of a vegan pop-up at the Tattooed Mom, which is right down the street from Blackbird. So I hit up Blackbird and hit up the Tattooed Mom. And I saw friend of the show, Grape Cat, was there, and other friend of the show, V Marks the Shop. And at V Marks the Shop, as we've previously mentioned in a pretty recent episode, they were selling the Louisville vegan beef jerky. And I got the dill buffalo flavored, which I think Andy talked very highly of a few episodes ago.
What'd you think?
It was okay.
Wow. You messing with me? Is this an early April Fool's joke? Is this a trick or treat, Paul?
This is a late trick or treat or an early April Fool's? I am not messing with you. I was not a huge, it was good, but I think I like the chewier jerky better, like the one where you kind of have to like pull on it to rip it off.
Like the
Primal Strips?
Primal Strips, yeah.
I like those a lot, yeah. It was good. I have no formal complaint. I will not be filing any formal complaints, but the consistency It could have been better. And I also, I haven't used this yet, but I also picked up some of that vegan magic. Because I want to, the vegan, what was it called?
Formerly the vegan magic bacon grease.
Yes. The product formerly known as vegan magic bacon grease.
Yeah.
And so I'm excited to use that because that should be good.
Yeah, I've used that and when I just like make some greens, some collards, and like steam them and then just finish them in the pan with a little bit of that. It's a nice smoky flavor.
Yeah. Oh, and I at Tattooed Mom and Blackbird, I met up with Bree, who I'm pretty sure listens to the show. And she was very, very nice. We talked a lot about podcasts, talked a lot about Comedy Bang Bang. And yes, very nice person. So I will be in Philadelphia a lot in the future. So if you live in Philadelphia and you want to hang out and tell me all of the other food places, all of the other 10,000 food places, definitely hit me up.
Paul, if you want to go on a nice fancy date, I haven't been. It's super high on my list. You should go to Veg. Okay. A lot of people have said that that is like the best meal of their life. So go drop some coin at Veg and let me know how it is.
All right. Maybe I will do that and talk about it next week.
I hope you do.
But that's all I got for food. An unusual amount of Paul food talk this week.
I know. You're a whole new man.
I don't have the finesse of Andy's critiques and reviews, but hopefully, dear listener, you enjoyed that.
I'm glad you're getting out there, Paul. I'm excited for you to be in Philly a lot more.
Yeah. Apparently, the most vegan-friendly city in the U.S., question mark?
It's hard for me to imagine that it beats out Portland, but it does seem like there's just new places popping up all the time.
I was actually specifically told that it has overtaken Portland as the most vegan-friendly.
Dang. Well,
who knows? I don't know. I will have to find some sources on this and get back to you all. But, yeah, interesting.
Very cool. Well, Paul, I'm glad some delicious things went in that beautiful mouth of yours this
week. Thank you. Beautiful bearded mouth.
All right. Let's cut the food talker down. Cut it off. Shut it off. Let's end the food talk and move into some complex ethical quagmires.
Let's do it. What's the first one?
So this is actually just kind of a little bit of follow-up from our, I believe, episode 54. We had a small discussion about PETA and their grab a pussy, adopt a local cat campaign. And in it, they claimed that what they did caused an uptick in cat adoptions, and we were skeptical of if that was actually true, and we were just kind of skeptical of their tactics in general, if they actually had an effect beyond getting some sort of inflammatory media coverage. And then an article came across my dashboard which linked to a study that was done, and it claims that in fact PETA's tactics are not only ineffective, they are counterproductive to creating new vegans. So I'm just going to read the abstract from this study. I'm not reading from the article. This is from the actual study. And it says, images of scantily clad women are used by advertisers to make products more attractive to men. This sex sells approach is increasingly employed to promote ethical causes, most prominently by the animal rights organization PETA. Yet sexualized images can dehumanize women, leaving an unresolved paradox. Is it effective to advertise an ethical cause using unethical means? In study one, a sample of Australian male undergraduates viewed PETA advertisements containing either sexualized or non-sexualized images of women. Intentions to support the ethical organization were reduced for those exposed to the sexualized advertising, and this was explained by their dehumanization of the sexualized women and not by increased arousal. Study 2 used a mixed-gender community sample from the United States, replicating this finding and extending it by showing that behaviors helpful to the ethical cause diminished after viewing the sexualized advertisements, which was again mediated by the dehumanization of the women depicted. Alternate explanations related to the reduced credibility of the sexualized women and their objectification were not supported. When promoting ethical causes, organizations may benefit from using advertising strategies that do not dehumanize women.
Wait, Andy.
Yes, Paul? You're telling me that
using shitty tactics does not work?
You know, that's just one study, or two studies. And, you know, no study is conclusive, but I think that's what they're saying here, Paul. And we, you know, we've talked about being skeptical of studies and whatnot on the show. However, this kind of just seems like a no duh kind of moment.
Yeah.
So I don't know if there's really much to talk about, but this was actually done in 2013, but I thought it was an interesting follow-up because we were skeptical of if these tactics really yielded any results. And in fact, it seems that it's likely that they do not. And I would go so far as to say, even if they did yield results, we could probably get the same results without dehumanizing women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I feel like the particular PETA one that we were talking about, I feel like goes beyond over-sexualizing and is just kind of like mocking sexual assault, which I feel like is more egregious, possibly.
Yeah, I think it definitely kind of crosses a line more so than the other things that they do, which is saying something because the other things that they do are not too great.
Negative.
All right, so I guess that is that. And just wanted to throw that out there. We will link to that study so you can read the whole thing if you're curious in the show notes at thecommentist.com. That's just thecommentist.com. Now, Paul.
Yes,
this,
Andy.
This past weekend was Halloween.
It was.
One of my favorite times of the year. And I did not do anything fun on Halloween.
I taught my college class dressed as Mario. and I will say, and I brought in lots of vegan snacks for the students.
Very nice.
Thank you.
Very nice. So anyway, I didn't get to do anything, but I came across this video where some activists employed a sneaky tactic for Halloween, and they advertised that there was a free screening of, like, the scariest movie in the world or the most horrifying movie in the world, and 70 people showed up, and then they were played Earthlings in its entirety. And there's a video, which we will link in the show notes, of just briefly explaining the tactic, but then the majority of this video is interviews with people who did watch the film or people who were involved with creating this event. So this is kind of an ambush kind of tactic. And they said in the video that about 10 people just left within the first 20 minutes, but the rest did stick around. So this is something that I have in some ways dealt with because the 10 Billion Lives Tour, as we've talked about many times on the show, involves pay-per-view activism, where we pay people $1 to watch a four-minute video about the treatment of animals on farms. And part of the tactic of that is to not reveal, unless asked, reveal the content of the video. You know, there's no, like, signs or, like, you're going to watch a video about, you know, food production or animal agriculture or anything like that. And every now and then someone will say, I wish that I had been warned about this. And I don't think they said in the video if they would tell people what it was if asked. But I'm guessing that they probably would not be telling people what it is, if even if they asked.
Yeah.
So a little difference there. But anyway, Paul, I thought this was kind of a curious tactic. We've talked about all sorts of tactics on the show before. And this is kind of a new one in terms of we've talked about, you know, what we think about recommending Earthlings to people, but in this fashion, like, what was your initial reaction to this type of tactic?
I thought it was actually a pretty decent tactic. I mean, it's like it seems like from the advertisements, people are going, cause it's like, oh, it's the scariest movie ever, blah, 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 blah. It's like, so people have some idea that what they're going to be seeing is intense. So I think I would feel differently if it was just like, hey, we're going to watch this. Like if they advertised, hey, we're going to watch this nice movie about like cute animals or something like that. And then they showed Earthlings, because I think that would draw a crowd that was not expecting that, versus this, where it's like, if you're going to see, quote, the scariest Halloween movie of all time, it's like you're expecting some level of intensity. So for that reason, I think it wasn't necessarily inappropriate to show it, versus like my other situation that I just came up with, that I think that would have been inappropriate. But Yeah, I think it was pretty good. I mean, it's like, obviously, they're not forcing anyone to come. They're not forcing anyone to stay. People can leave if they want to. That's good. So I think it was good. I think they probably exposed the movie to a lot of people that would not have any interest in watching it or would not have watched it on their own had this not happened.
Interesting. I was kind of expecting you to not be a fan of this tactic.
Really? How come?
I mean, I think we've talked about how Earthlings has its place and can certainly be an eye-opener for some folks, but also that it can often be very sort of debilitating and that it is like so much that a lot of times people watch it and they just shut off or they get really angry and then they just like don't want to feel what they just felt and then they just kind of push it to the back of their mind and don't want to deal with it. So I actually was not as keen on this strategy.
Well, I'll also say I wish that this YouTube video was very different than what it actually was. Uh-huh. Because in the beginning, when the person was just kind of setting up what had happened, I think they said like, oh, there was like a debrief afterwards. And it's like, you could talk to like you, there were people that were being like supportive and stuff like that. Like people there to provide support for people. It didn't like show any of that debriefing. It didn't show any of the conversations that happened afterwards. So I think that would play a big part in the effectiveness of this tactic. Mm-hmm. And it seems like from what they were saying, that they did do a good job with that. But then what they actually showed in the video was only like maybe four different groups of people. Well, it was like four or five people in total that they interviewed. And I kind of wish instead of just keep going back, because they kind of would go like this person, this person, this person, this person. And then it would go back around again and go the same four or five, six people again. And they just kept going back to those people. I wish they had gotten more interviews because it was kind of hard to tell for me. It was hard to tell who was a part of it and who was someone that had never seen it before. Like who was a part of it? Because I feel like at least one or two of those people were like at least volunteers or something that were helping to set up the movie or set up the event.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish it had said that because I almost feel like it was, no, I don't know if it was being deceptive, but it's like if you just see someone saying like, oh, the event, like this event was awesome, it was really eye-opening. If that's someone that's putting on the event, like of course they're going to say that versus someone who just wandered into this showing and really experienced something. That person saying that is I think would be a lot more incredible than just the person that put on the event who of course is going to say it went well. So I wish that it had done that. I wish it had at least labeled who was a part of it. Yeah.
And perhaps who was already vegan. It seemed like there was a group of three that were being interviewed, and it seemed like at least one of them was already vegan.
Yes. Yeah.
From the impression, and it was like, is this someone who brought their friends? But I didn't feel like the footage that was shown was necessarily... didn't make me go, oh, I have some ethical misgivings about this tactic, but wow, look how effective it was. And again, even if something's super effective doesn't necessarily mean it's like the most ethical thing to do. But putting that aside, it didn't make me go, wow, these people like really changed their views about this. And of course, most people don't watch, you know, a vegan video, a documentary, and just go vegan on the spot, especially like right after when they're really processing everything, mm-hmm. especially Earthlings. That's such a massive assault on the brain, on the eyes, you know?
Yeah.
And that is like a lot to take in,
mm-hmm.
but it kind of just showed whoever was interviewing the people giving arguments for why they're wrong about the things that the objections that they're bringing up.
Yeah.
And I actually thought that in many points, the person who was interviewing them, it was kind of like a good exercise in how not to talk to people about these issues. just because there was not a lot of question asking. It was a lot of just jumping in with the answer right away. There was times answering questions that weren't necessarily being asked by the people.
Yeah.
So that was kind of, it felt like a missed opportunity. And who knows if everyone was getting an individual debrief or if they just had someone kind of go up and speak to the audience afterwards, or, you know, they're doing it in small groups or something like that. But I do believe that the human debrief component of these types of things, whether it's, you know, individual, small group, pay-per-view, or something big like this, I think that's like the most crucial reason to engage in these things, is that person-to-person interaction.
Yeah, I think that's kind of what I was trying to get at when I was saying, like, I think this might have been a great tactic, or at least a good tactic, or an effective tactic, but I'm not really sure because I didn't think the video was maybe put together the best to represent necessarily what was actually going on. And to give them credit, I'm assuming this was on either Halloween or maybe Saturday or Sunday before Halloween, which is maybe one day ago, maybe two or three days ago. So they've definitely put this video, edited this video very, very quickly, mm-hmm. To give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think the video necessarily was an accurate representation of maybe what had happened or how everyone was feeling. But if, you know, if 70 people went and only 10 people left, who knows how many of these people were in on it. So if like it was 40 people that were already vegan that were there, and then there would only be 30 people left, and then 10 of those people left. So I don't know. So, it was kind of hard to, from the video, it was kind of hard to get a good grasp as to what actually went down. But as a tactic, I think that it's not a bad idea. I actually think I saw someone post on Instagram. I don't know if they were like reposting this picture, if this was their picture, but it was like a sign taped up to a telephone pole that was like, do you want to watch the, like, do you want to watch the scariest movie of all time? This is like another Halloween type thing. It was like, want to watch the scariest movie of all time, and it's all true. Like, watch Earthlings free on YouTube. So it wasn't like an advertisement for a screening necessarily, but it was saying it was just an advertisement for the movie in general.
Ah, interesting. I guess that feels different because it's a person kind of going online and they're just by themselves probably, and mm-hmm. they'll maybe feel less social pressure to continue to watch because they're just by themselves.
Yeah.
But I guess maybe that social pressure is a good thing. So I mean, something like this, I guess a potential worry is a feeling of anger and extreme discomfort, of deception, and sort of placing that on the person, the people that are showing this video, more so than placing it on the system that is being portrayed within the video, and the potential backlash that comes from that. And, you know, like I said, the 10 billion tour, you know, we engage in that, and every now and then someone's like, I wish you would have told me what it was.
Yeah.
And, but it almost seems like, okay, well, you just watch the thing for 4 minutes and only two of it is graphic footage, versus an hour and a half of just the most extreme suffering you could possibly imagine in terms of animals. It seems like that would be much more likely to really piss off some people. And then, mm-hmm. and then of course, then that's like, well, these damn vegans, like, you know, they tricked me and I'm so angry about it. And so I guess,
yeah.
So I'm like, okay, that's a potential negative yeah. side effect. And I'm like, well, do people deserve to feel comfortable when we talk about this? No, I don't think so. But then if making them super uncomfortable is not productive and maybe counterproductive, then we should still take that into account. Like, I don't know. What do you think, Paul?
I wonder when was the reveal that it was Earthlings? Like, did someone come out before the screening and say, this is a very graphic video about, like, animal exploitation, or like what you're going to see is like true and it's very, very graphic. Like, I wonder if someone kind of gave them like the like let them know that was going to happen, because then again it's like then you can kind of prepare yourself for it, versus like I think just seeing those images come up and not expecting them to come up would make anyone extremely uncomfortable, you know? So it's like, I wonder if they did anything to try and, I mean, no matter how you do it, it's going to make, that movie is going to make you uncomfortable, but I wonder what they did, since it was this kind of surprise tactic. I do wonder if they just did not give anything away until the movie literally started and you saw these terrible, terrible things and you're like, whoa, this is not what I expected. Or if they gave you some inkling of what was going on, like right before the movie started, because I think that might be better too, even though you might lose a few people. I think it would still be like, it's okay for people to be prepared to see these terrible, horrible things. You know,
I guess I would assume that they gave them no preface and just pressed play on the video. That would, I think they, that would ruin, if I was doing this and I was trying to be as effective as possible, if I was trying to get the most reaction out of people, the most shock and awe, I certainly wouldn't explain to them what it was going to be right before showing it. I would just be like, here we go. And then here's a long, boring intro with Joaquin Phoenix and like slow motion waves and horses running or whatever, you know, and people would be like, why is this scary? You know, and then it would actually hit. That's how I would do it if I was trying to get the most, you know, shock value out of the whole thing.
But I wonder if like people were cut because they had a lot of food there, vegan food, which was great. I think that's super important. But I wonder if some people were like reading the labels, they're like, vegan chocolate chip cookies. And then they look to the other table like, vegan cheese. Like, what's going on here?
Yeah, well, so, yeah, and they showed a footage of, like, a bunch of vegan, like, starter guide pamphlets on a table. So I'm wondering if those were just sitting out in the room or if they kind of put them out afterwards or if they were kind of out in the lobby area when people walked out.
Yeah,
because that would be, and then again, that's how I would do it. Like I wouldn't have anything in the room that would give away what it is. And then while people are watching, I would be setting up all this vegan stuff, you know, for what people to see as soon as they leave, or I'd bring it all in as soon as the thing ended, as, you know, people are getting debriefed and talked to and all of those things.
See, I don't think I would do that. I think that's too deceptive.
But why not, like, go all the way?
I don't know. I'm just like, I'm so scared of like, oh, I don't want people to be mad at me because I tricked them.
Well, I think that that's going to happen no matter how gently you ease them into it. They're going to feel deceived no matter what.
Maybe. Maybe you're right. I think I'll say this. I think that this is a good tactic, but I'm not going to be the one to be doing this and like just standing up on the stage about to hit the play button, like an anxious, sweaty mess. Like, oh my God, what are these people going to think about me?
They see you and they're just like, what's wrong with this guy?
This movie must be really scary.
He's scared to press play. So there was a couple of interesting characters in the video.
Yeah.
And, like, the first person they showed, I think, just immediately went to human extinction. Like, right away. And I've dealt with people like that. You know, people say, well, this isn't an animal rights problem. This is a human population problem. And, you know, many people say we need to control the human population. Some people go so far as to say, you know, like, we should just, you know, eradicate ourselves from the planet. And this person would not stop talking about that.
Another questionable editing choice to keep going back to this person in multiple like okay, here's this person talking about human extinction, now we go talk to these other person, this other group of people, this other guy, and then go back to this guy again talking about human extinction like three or four times. And I was like, why? This is uncomfortable. I am so like, this is this what it feels like to be put on the spot like that? I was like, I am so uncomfortable right now.
Yeah, and again, that's kind of the thing. It's like, okay, well, who is this video for? That's actually a good question. Who do you think this video is for?
Oh, that's a good... I feel like the organization that put this on is going to put out this video and say, like, look at this awesome thing that we did and look at how effective it was. So maybe to promote their organization to other vegans.
I guess that would probably be my inclination as well, except I don't watch it and go, wow, look at the change that's being made.
Yeah.
You know, like the group of three was pretty favorable to it.
But one of them was already vegan.
Yeah. So
I mean, I think this has maybe to do with the fact that they rushed to edit and put this out and that it is not just a very great I'm giving them benefit of the doubt. I just don't think it was a great representation of what actually happened. Although, yeah. Unless like they got tons of interviews and these were the only ones that they were like, okay, this makes us sound favorable.
Yeah. And I mean, I'd also guess that if they're just kind of grabbing people as they're leaving the whole thing, they probably only had a little bit of time. I would guess these are the only interviews they actually got, unless they had any that were like super negative.
Yeah.
But, yeah. You know, I mean, if they're talking to everyone for 5 minutes, I mean, most people aren't standing around for 20 minutes after a movie ends. So,
yeah.
But yeah, it's like, okay, well, I don't think this is something to show non-vegans to get them on board. I guess it's something vegans might pass around to be like, ha, you know, we made these carnists uncomfortable and made them face what they actually do into animals. And it feels like that would probably be a lot of the usage of this type of video.
Yeah.
You know, and I guess maybe if we view this as a favorable tactic, the positive outcome of that type of sharing would just be inspiring other people to do the same thing.
Yeah.
Again, I'm not necessarily ready to give this the old Andy stamp of approval, but.
And I also think like it was well timed with Halloween.
Uh huh.
Like for some reason, I feel like that makes me more comfortable than just showing this on any other day and tricking people into watching it.
Yeah. What if they said the world's scariest haunted house and they just had people going through an active slaughterhouse?
Hmm.
Where they're actually killing animals.
Well, who would be putting that on?
I don't know. PETA?
Probably. I mean, I think that may be effective. I think I would be against that, but it would be... Yeah.
Why would you be against that and not this Earthling tactic?
Because Earthlings, when you watch the movie Earthlings, it's not killing any more animals.
Well, this would be a slaughterhouse that's killing animals regardless of whether or not people are touring through it or not.
You mean like PETA just puts up this big sign in front of a slaughterhouse that's like, hey, come get free haunted.
Yeah, there's just like some traffic cones leading from a parking lot into a slaughterhouse. And like someone dresses Dracula at the front door.
I think that would, if in that wild situation, which in no way would the slaughterhouse ever let them happen, I think that would be a great tactic.
Oh my God, Paul.
What? Tell me why that wouldn't be a good tactic. I mean, beyond the cheese factor of the haunted house thing, to get people to see what's going on in slaughterhouses. I think that, I mean, isn't that the point of like Earthlings, and isn't that the point of all these other graphic videos, is to show people what's actually happening?
Yeah. Yeah. Honestly, I feel like I can't really come up with any solid argument why we shouldn't, other than perhaps it would just traumatize people too much to actually take action and they would be so angry about what was happening.
Oh, you mean like in the sense that we are tricking them into doing this?
Tricking them into seeing live animal slaughter, which I think most people would be very upset about.
Yeah, that is that would be very upsetting.
However, apologies to everyone in advance if there happens to be someone from PETA that's listening to this and going, yes, yes, great idea.
Wait, are you apologizing to the PETA person or to everyone else that is going to then have to deal with the PETA person implementing that tactic?
Everybody else.
Okay. No, I mean, I think... I don't know. It's like at this point we're arguing about the ethicality of surprising someone into seeing live slaughter. but I don't know. I think that the next time that person goes to eat meat, that's what they are going to be thinking about. And they're probably going to vom.
Probably. All right. Well, Paul, we are talking about a wild hypothetical here. And I say, we keep that train rolling with another wild hypothetical.
Well, can I say one more thing, Andy?
Sure.
Because would you, like, if you could organize just tours of slaughterhouses to people and somehow find people that are willing to do it, would you agree that that would be, like, a good tactic?
If it was like, hey, come meet your meat for real and
yeah.
You know exactly what you're getting into?
Yeah.
Yeah.
because I don't know if, like, I don't know. I guess it might be a little messed up to surprise someone into seeing that.
Yeah, but I think it'd be really messed up.
but it's what they're, you know, if it's what they are contributing to every day or most days.
Yeah, and again, I'm sure the argument is, well, this is what people are paying for. If they can't watch it, then they shouldn't be paying for it to happen.
Yeah, and I mean, isn't this kind of what, like, people that post a lot of graphic vegan stuff on, like, Instagram or Facebook or something like that, if you're just scrolling through your Facebook, you're expecting to see pictures of, like, puppies and Halloween costumes, and then, like, the videos which now on Facebook just start playing automatically. It's like, mm-hmm. a video like that starts playing. Isn't that kind of similar?
It is, but you're not, like, a captive audience inside of a slaughterhouse.
But, I mean, if this, in this slaughterhouse, haunted house, you would be able to leave at any time. It's not one of those twisted ones that it's in California.
No safe word.
No, yeah. You would be able to leave.
Well,
I don't know.
I think that it's not a great tactic.
Okay. Agree to disagree.
Okay. So back to the video.
Yes.
There was a person in this video that, as we mentioned, was talking about human extinction a lot.
Quite a lot.
And this is certainly something that I've heard a lot of vegans say, which is, and I may have said it myself on the podcast, that, you know, essentially the only species on Earth, if it was to go extinct, the Earth would thrive, is human beings. And so when I saw this video and I heard this person talking about this, it reminded me of an article that I recently came across from The Vegan Strategist, who we have, we've discussed some of his articles in the past and don't always agree, but it always makes me think. And so this article is called, Would You Press the Button to Make Humanity Go Extinct? And this just came out a few days ago. We will post a link in the old show notes, but I was like, huh, this perfectly goes along with this guy's comments and would make a really interesting discussion here. This is, of course, a hypothetical, but I think an interesting experiment, a thought experiment, especially since Halloween just happened, and it's kind of a spooky thought experiment. So
very, a very dark, morbid, spooky thought experiment.
Yes. So this article starts off by saying, I often hear people entertaining the thought of making humanity disappear from the universe because, as a species, we are causing a lot of suffering to ourselves and other sentient beings and the planet. One thought experiment goes like this. If you could make humanity painlessly disappear with the pressing of a button, would you press it? Or, slightly reframing the experiment so that you can make an abstraction of your own responsibility, would you stop someone else from pressing the button? And then Tobias goes on to say that he himself would not press the button. Did he actually say he would stop someone else? I assume he would, given what he said.
I don't think he mentioned that, but I think, like you said, we can jump to that conclusion.
Yeah, and so he gives examples for why he would not press this button, and he does acknowledge the immense amount of suffering that happens from humanity's existence on the planet, but doesn't really go into detail, because we all know how horrible things are. And his reasons were, one, humans may do a lot of damage, but they're also wonderful. And he says, never in the history of our planet, or as far as we know, the universe, has there been a species that invests so much time in making things better for others. Two, humans still have a lot of potential to improve. And three, humans might be able to help other species further down the road. So, Paul, my question to you is, would you press that button?
I would definitely not press the button.
Definitely not.
Definitely not.
Not even a thought in your head that you would not press that button.
That is correct.
Why not?
I think I'm looking at his reasons that he gives. I mean, I think that I don't know if that's exactly how I would phrase them. This is one of those things where I have not yet been able to formalize, like, the words about how exactly I feel about this. But
I'll do it live on air right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Seriously. Because I when I think about, like, I know this is very selfish, you know, but it's like, I think if I was faced with that choice, it's like I would think about the people that I've personally connected with and like all the joy that I get out of those connections, out of my friends and family and all those sorts of things. And when I think about it, it's like, okay, that's a selfish reason. But for many other people, for many, many other people, they have that same exact thing where they have these joyful connections with all these other people. And it's like, am I going to, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of terrible, terrible stuff that we do. But I would also be taking away all of the intense joy that comes with, you know, humanity.
Yeah, but I guess the question is, mm-hmm. is all of that joy, does that outweigh either minutely or significantly all of the pain and suffering that is caused by humanity's existence on this planet?
But I think that just because there is still pain and suffering, we have the potential, like Tobias said, we have the potential to improve. I still think even though there is that suffering, we have the potential to make things better. And I don't really see the things, like, I don't really see happiness and joy going away in the future, but I do see situations improving for people. Do you know what I mean?
He does mention that even though it kind of seems improbable, that this is actually like the least violent time in human history and that violence and et cetera is going down.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess to go back to your original point, in that you acknowledge that, you know, you get a lot of joy from other people, from existing. I would imagine that probably extends to the fact that like you enjoy listening to music and you enjoy seeing bands, mm-hmm. and maybe seeing the occasional film.
Maybe seeing Andy occasionally.
Seeing my face every now and then. But if there was a button you could press and make all of us disappear, you wouldn't. It's kind of like when someone says, well, how would you feel if you were aborted? And you're like, well, I wouldn't feel anything. I wouldn't feel any way about it because I would never exist. And to me, it feels like, okay, well, if everyone's just gone painlessly, and I know this is like the humane meat argument or something, but like if like everyone is just gone painlessly, then you wouldn't miss it because you wouldn't be there anymore.
But you also wouldn't be there for things to be better than they are now.
Yeah, but what if they don't get better?
Honestly, I think if things don't get better, then they will just get exponentially worse, and then everything will explode, and then we'll get your wish, Andy.
But that's not my wish. I didn't say whether or not I'd push it yet, Paul.
All right.
You're making some assumptions, right, but the totally hypothetical pain-free removal of humans from existence on the planet is very different from a future in which we continue to destroy the planet and, you know, kill off the bees. And there's all these reports now saying that, you know, 2/3 of all wild animals are going to be dead by 2050. And who knows if that's accurate or not. But there's like a very long, slow, painful death of the planet and those on it that comes with waiting out the you know, natural extinction of humanity, which with it would imagine we'd be bringing a lot of animals with us.
But
whereas if we were all just like disappeared right now, obviously there'd, you know, I guess there's some hypotheticals to deal with, but like say everyone just disappeared, it's like, okay, there's some animals that are stuck in, you know, farms and maybe they can't fend for themselves and they're all going to die, but they were going to die anyway. And then they won't continue to breed and produce offspring that will suffer and go through all the same stuff.
Well, may I interject, Andy?
Interject away, Paul.
I think Tobias brings up a good point that like without humans, it's not like all animals are living phenomenal lives anyways.
Uh-huh.
So I think he brings up the fact that it's like many animals go through starvation and suffering and cold and like threat of attack constantly without human intervention. So, I mean, it's very possible that any given animal would still have a pretty crummy life without any human interaction.
Yes, it has been said that nature is red of tooth and claw, for sure. But you think about if every human was just gone all of a sudden, all those wild animals are still there dealing with their existence, which, yeah, it's probably pretty horrible, especially if you're like a squirrel or like some animal that just is constantly being attacked by owls or whatever.
Yeah.
That must be a kind of a terrifying existence. So all of those animals are still going through what they're going through. But then the, 65 billion land animals on the planet, plus all the fish, that are put through this horrible system, all of a sudden those animals are no longer suffering from that. And that's like a pretty immense amount of suffering that has been alleviated.
But then what if I said to you, what if there's a button that also eliminates all predators? Like, why wouldn't you then hit that one as well?
That's a good question, Paul.
Exactly. Boom. No.
Well, a while ago, there was an article I came across that was like, if we truly care about animals, we should before killing predators. Not being an ecologist, I'd imagine that would mess up the ecosystem pretty badly.
But I feel like the ecosystem kind of goes in that tide-esque fashion anyways, where it's like there are a lot of predators, like they eat, and now there's not a lot of prey left, so then the predators start to starve and that dwindles their population, and then the prey spring back up into a healthy population, and then it kind of just continues that cycle, you know?
But if you just remove all the predators, would they never come back into existence, Paul?
I think there would still be, then the prey would be whatever they're eating. Yeah, you're right. I mean, it would mess with the ecosystem. But honestly, it's like, I mean, I think that if humans didn't exist, animals would still be suffering. Animals would still be going through extinction. Of course, not at the same rate that they are now, but I guess I just don't think that that's a justifiable reason enough to eliminate humanity entirely.
What's a good argument for keeping humanity? That's not, well, I guess selfish reasons are totally valid. Like, I have loved ones that I care about, and I have movies I want to go see, and I need to see the next Star Wars. And if we're all extinct, I can't see the next Star Wars.
And I think that those are selfish reasons, but if that's why everyone is doing it, then it's no longer a selfish reason. It's that we're making connections with other humans, and we're helping each other out, and we're fulfilling our needs, and we're helping others fulfill their needs. And I think that's reason enough, because I don't think it's selfish if that's how everyone is feeling.
I mean, don't you think it's possible for all of us to be universally selfish?
But I mean, that's what I'm saying, is I think that even though it's, quote, selfish, it's still a valid reason. I guess that's what I was saying.
Okay. All right. I got you. But it still seems like if humans were all gone in an instant overnight, painlessly, then there would still be significantly less suffering in the world. And I don't think that the reasons, like, Tobias lays out in the article, such as, well, we could potentially, we're infants essentially in our development, and we could potentially develop into these benevolent overlords that could go and help other species on other planets. It seems to me as like very far-fetched thinking, and it's good to acknowledge that you and I, and also Tobias, are relatively privileged white men. And we kind of enjoy a specific type of existence.
Mm-hmm.
But also at the same time, it's like, okay, well, who are we to be like, suffering is pain and let's just end it for everybody? That's like a whole other aspect, is that you're making that choice for everyone. That's like a whole other kind of wrench in the works there.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can also look at, would you, I'm going to ask you a question, Andy.
I'm going to answer it.
Would you agree or disagree that as a whole, humanity is causing less suffering to other humans than it did 500 years ago?
I am not educated enough on that to give an answer.
Yeah. Because I would say yes. I would think that there was. And not only, Well, I'll even rephrase it as, do you think, I guess this is a, yeah.
I mean, there was way less humans 500 years ago. So how are we measuring the intensity of the pain and suffering caused per individual, or are we multiplying that out by the whole population?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know. Just when I think about, like, I don't know. I would like to think that as a whole, there is less suffering going on now. Again, I can only speak from my personal experiences and from as someone that's living in the United States. But it's like, it seems to me like we are slowly progressing towards less suffering. And I think that that's true within humanity and for animals as well.
So, but is that slow progression, is it, if we get to a point where there's no suffering, but if we could press it, and that takes however many hundreds of years or something, even 50 years, but we press the button today and there's zero suffering now, that eliminates all the suffering that will be necessary during that progression period as well.
But I don't think you would, I don't know, I just don't think you wouldn't make that choice for any other species, would you?
But we are a totally different story than any other species.
That's true, but you, a single person, is making the decision for every other person.
Yes, that is like a separate question, which I think is a totally valid question, but it's, I don't know. I mean, I guess I just don't see anything inherently valuable about humans being on this planet.
I don't know. I think we bring something unique, and it has caused lots of suffering, but it is also, I think we are able to experience more intense and joyful emotions also because of that same thing that makes it so that we are so shitty sometimes.
Yeah. And I mean, like, I think that the new season of Black Mirror is incredible, but I don't know if my enjoyment of that is worth the amount of suffering that is caused by my existence, even as someone who takes, you know, pretty decent steps to not cause harm to others. I still, you know, cause harm.
Yeah.
And it would be better if I wasn't here in that, if you're measuring it by that metric.
I also think, maybe I'm wrong with this, I was not alive 500 years ago, but contrary to popular belief, but I do think that we are taking steps to improve ourselves at increasing rates as time goes on.
It kind of also feels like we're destroying ourselves at increasing rates, though.
It does. You're right. Well, I think that's like technology. You know, it's like technology is increasing at an exponential rate, which both allows us to do great things and to do terrible things.
So, again, if no matter how great we become, is it worth the amount of suffering that is going to be required to get us to that greatness?
I think so. I think we should let this one play out, see how it goes before we hit the hard reset button.
I don't know. That just feels like it's easy for someone to say who lives like a relatively comfortable life, as you and I both do. Mm-hmm. Not that we don't have our own, you know, joys and suffering and mental strife and, you know, all the things that we go through. You know, it's like a lot easier for us to say that than perhaps some other people in the world.
Also, who's to say that if humans don't go extinct, then another species wouldn't just evolve into what we are anyways?
Yeah, but that would take a long time.
Then this has taken a long time. So why wouldn't you say, oh, so in this button is going to eliminate all humanity and whatever the whatever great ape is the closest relative to humanity, knowing that in 10 million years, they're going to be in the exact same position we are.
I think we would leave the button around for them to make that decision at some point.
Oh, jeez. Oh, Andy.
I think there's some elaborate labyrinth that they would have to go through, and the button is in the center of it, and they get to decide for themselves at that point.
I don't know. I just don't. It just seems wrong to me.
Do you think that if it was put up to a popular vote, how many people do you think would vote yes?
Not as many as you think there would, I feel like.
Yeah, no, honestly, I feel like it would be a very small amount of people.
Yeah, because people are selfish.
Oh, so doesn't that mean we deserve to be extinct?
No, it just means that we deserve to... Stop putting me on the spot, Andy. It just means we find pleasure in our life in different ways. And it doesn't need to be like one universal way where everyone says like, okay, this is how we are happy. But in that same measure, I think we can still work to eliminate suffering.
So, okay. So Paul, let me ask you this, moving this from the hypothetical to the real world.
Okay. Okay.
This article started off by saying that Tobias hears a lot of vegan advocates express this position, and that this is one that seems to, by his anecdotal experience, seems to be held at a greater volume in animal rights advocates than the general population.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that attitude? That I don't even know if I want to call it misanthropy, but I guess that's what it is. Even though I kind of, in my head, I'm like, I feel like things probably would be better if we were all gone. I don't know if I'd press the button, but at the same time, I don't feel misanthropic about it. I don't feel like I have hatred for human beings.
Yeah.
I feel quite the opposite, in fact, in that I do wish to alleviate the suffering of others as much as, you know, I am capable of doing.
Mm-hmm.
I feel compassion for others in that regard. But I'm wondering how does this translate over into our vegan advocacy? Is this like something that we should acknowledge if people bring up the population argument?
I mean, I think that if you're trying to get someone to turn vegan and then you tell them that you wish the entirety of humanity didn't exist, I don't think that's going to be a very compelling argument to make them want to join your community. I mean, I think it makes sense that maybe more vegans have this idea, or more, I guess, lean more towards this idea, because like a vegan is definitely more likely to be compassionate towards the suffering of an animal and compassionate towards, or more open to the ways of alleviating that suffering. But I don't think that this is something that, even if you feel this way, I feel like it's not something you should bring up to someone you were trying to convince to be vegan. I think it's only going to scare them off.
I agree with that.
Because like most, I feel like if someone brought this up to you and was like, oh yeah, like I would go vegan, but like I can't go vegan. But you know, man, humans, they just suck. I wish I could just like wipe them off the earth so that all the animals could be free. I think that you can then turn that on them and be like, so like that's not going to happen, obviously, but because that's not going to happen, you're not going to do anything to help to alleviate the suffering of humans or non-humans. Like, it's almost like, come on, bro, stop, you're copping out.
I agree with that. I do see that sentiment expressed by people who rarely, I guess outside of the vegan advocacy community that exists, and certainly those attitudes are there. But like when you're sort of talking to someone about these issues and like, well, we should just be extinct, rarely does that person say, but in the meantime, I am going to make these changes because if I'm going to be here, I might as well just do the least harm that I can.
Yeah. 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 It's a very non-constructive attitude to be like wish this could happen, but it's not, so I'm not going to do anything.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I think in that point we have found agreement.
Yay!
And I also think, contrary to what many listeners might be thinking, Paul and I are neither stoned nor in a philosophy 101 class right now. And I think that's probably a good place to wrap it up. What do you think, Paul?
I think so, too.
All right, we want to know what you think. Would you press the human extinction button? Why or why not? Leave a comment at thecommentist.com. That's thecommentist.com. Or send us an email, thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. And be sure to go over to our Instagram, thebeardedvegans, to see pictures of all the food we've been talking about.
Hell yeah. So what do you got coming up, Andy?
Paul, I don't have much going on for the rest of the year. I'm going to be at the Atlanta Veg Fest in Atlanta, Georgia, November 12th. And then I'll be at the Compassion Fest Holiday Market December 9th, 10th, and 11th. And that's going to wrap up the rest of the year. But, you know, you can go to CompassionCo.com for all the information on those things, or check out some t-shirts. And that's going to be it. Otherwise, I think I'll just be exploring all the delicious vegan food in New York in a couple of weeks.
Hell yeah. And I'll hopefully be at that Connecticut one. So if you happen to be from Connecticut and for some reason I don't know you already, maybe I'll see you there.
You know, there's a couple people left in Connecticut you haven't met yet.
A couple people.
All right, Paul. There's only one thing left to say.
We are the Bearded Vegans, signing off.
G-O-E-S-O-N. Got more than money and sense, my friend. You got heart, and you're going your own way. L-I-F-E-G-O-E-S-O-N. What you don't have now will come back again. You got heart, and you're going your own way.
And I guess, I mean, it's something that I think people would argue against. Oh my God, there's a really cute raccoon running in front of my car right now. It's like a little burglar. So cute. Trash burglar.
Trash burglar.
Oh my God. I want them to come over here and just hang out. Anyway.
Oh, that's a good... I feel like the organization that put this on is going to put out this video and say, like, look at this awesome thing that we did and look at how effective it was. So maybe to promote their organization... Two other vegans.
I'm sorry, the raccoon's running in the other direction now.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. Okay, they're up on like their little tippy toes, like they're like trying to sneak around.